All right, it's Wednesday night on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet 590 the Fan for the next hour ahead of Ducks and Sens after us on the network. Get a little NBA quarterfinal matchups of the Emirates Cup. Justin couldn't be more excited. Golden State and Houston, 9:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1.
Tell me that wasn't a good night last night.
It was actually, that almost redeemed a lot of the feelings that.
No need for redemption.
Okay,
it's always been this way.
All right, we're back.
Get on board.
James Herbert of CBS Sports at 6:30, but a treat and a pleasure to be joined by Elliot Friedman at 32 Thoughts on Hockey Night in Canada. Freeze, how are you?
For you guys.
We are very pleased to be talking to you at the Bog. You guys call it the Bog down there?
No, we don't do that because we're old and unhip, so we don't know. Like, if Bog is actually a cool term, Ailish, we wouldn't use it.
You should sprinkle it in.
I think that's still to be determined how cool it is.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one, Justin. But realizing that I'm a bit of an older fossil, I don't really know what's young and cool and hip these days.
Would it be young and cool and hip if the NHL did an in-season tournament one day? I might be, like, the biggest fan of the NBA Cup, the Emirates NBA Cup, and make sure to have the full title right. But, like, it seems like it's something that adds a little something in December to the NBA. A lot of people are complaining about the NBA nowadays. But when it comes to the NBA Cup, like, I just think there's something there. And especially if guys are going to have money on the line, potentially. Is that part of the discussion down there at the Bog at all?
I don't think so. But let me just caveat it with this, Justin, is that you know, I've asked them about the idea of an in-season event before, and I could tell the NHL teams weren't crazy about it. I think, if anything, if they knew they could use it as, like, a property to sell, I wonder if that would – I know when it came to the NBA, that's what they were looking at. Like, did the NBA sell it as something that was a tangible thing that could make money for them? And I, you know, to be honest, I don't know the answer to that question, but I know that the only someone in the NHL told me that was the only reason they might consider that. Now, what I do wonder about, though, is that I think it's possible. I don't know. I want to say it's likely, but I think it's possible. In the next few years, we may be going to an 84-game schedule with only four exhibition games. It does sound like the momentum is gaining for that one. So that says to me, Justin, like, what would you do with two extra games? Like, how would you make it work? Would they be, like, would you do anything special with that? I think they've left the option open for a creative idea there. But does it mean an in-season tournament? Does it mean more international play? Like, what does it mean? I think they're still trying to figure that out. So I'm not saying a no, but I don't know if I believe that particular thing is likely.
Well, what would you do with two additional games?
You know, it's a good question. I might consider, like, I think the NHL has realized that, like, there still is a bit more to do internationally. You know, like, you have to make sure you continue to be strong in places like Sweden and other Scandinavian countries in Europe. I do think more into places like Germany is on the radar. Like, one of your biggest stars in the league right now is a German player, and you've got to take advantage of that. You know, I haven't stopped since Luke Robitaille mentioned that, you know, he thinks they have to go into the UK more. Like, that's a market that is untapped. I wouldn't say untapped, but it's not tapped as much, I guess, Justin. You know, I think they want to go back to Australia at some point. And I mean, there's always China, right? So, you know, I think more international hockey is possible, but I think you should be open to, it just definitely sounds to me like they're trying to think, if we go to two more games, is there something extra we can do with them?
All right, Elliot is down at the Bog, the Board of Governors meetings.
I should say, Elish, I just got back home today, so I don't want it's like I say. I always say to people, I don't have a university degree. I don't want people accusing me of academic fraud. So I just want to, make it clear that I'm back home now.
All right. We appreciate the footnote. So you're back home. What was the biggest topic of conversation throughout the Board of Governors? I know I saw some ponderings about the cap potentially moving up. What are your take homes?
Well, I think the cap is probably the biggest one, because that's the one that most fans care about the most. It's like, what's the, since COVID, the cap has risen slowly, drip, drip, drip. And now, to make a long story very short, before the COVID world, it was linked. It was revenue 50-50, and 50% of revenue was to create the cap, basically, to make it simple. And when they when COVID hit, they agreed, and the players said, we're not going to link it anymore. And so what happened was, it wasn't 50-50. They set numbers for the way the cap could work for the six seasons of the deal. And credit to the league, the revenues have rebounded much greater than I think. Like, at that time, when you go back, nobody knew what the world was going to be like. It's generally been very strong revenue-wise. The commissioner said $6.6 billion U.S. this year. You always have your concerns, but it's overall the health of the league is strong. And so now, Ailish, let's just say in 2 years when the CBA ends, they go back to 50-50. Well, what players have told me, and now some of the agents kind of said, and now the league has kind of admitted it for the first time, is that if you go back to 50-50 in 2 years, the cap will be significantly higher than it is now. And, some people have come in around, most people seem to think it'll be over 100 if they keep going this way. And where that number goes, it depends on how optimistic you want to be. So there was definitely going to be a conversation. Next year's cap is set at 92.4, I think it is. But there's going to be a conversation about taking it higher. I have had people say 95. I've had people say 97, but we don't know. And when it first got reported a couple weeks ago, Bettman kind of denied it. And this time, however, because he mentioned it to the Board of Governors, he said, yes, there are options out there. And he admitted the other day that, yes, it's going to be discussed. Now, this is going to be a negotiation, because it does say that for next year, both sides, the league and the players, have to agree to any increase. So you know that it's going to be a negotiation topic. But for the first time, Bettman admitted the cap could go higher than expected. And I think that's the thing that most fans care about the most. And it's pretty significant news.
Elliot, would it be good for the league? Let's say the cap was $150 million and there was an appetite for some teams to spend $150 million. Clearly, there would be quite a few. Toronto would definitely be one of them. But there'd be other teams that wouldn't want to do that. I mean, we're looking at baseball right now. There's haves and have-nots. There's like three teams that can, be in the Soto sweepstakes in earnest, and he's going to stay in New York, and he's going to play for the Mets, and they're going to pay him a ridiculous sum of money, bigger than one contract more than an entire team's budget. And it works for baseball. It might be the best thing for baseball, having these big, bad teams, New York and LA, going at it, and baseball maybe ready for a little renaissance because of this disparity. In 10 years, let's say there is a huge cap number, or it's risen significantly, but some owners don't want to meet, the demands of $150 million. Maybe it's closer to 125, 130. Do you think the league would operate a little bit better? Do you think it would be beneficial for the NHL to have some sort of salary disparity, at least in terms of total payrolls?
Well, the only thing about your hypothesis I would just point out is that baseball doesn't have a floor and the NHL does. Mm-hmm. So you can't have as wide a disparity as there would be in baseball. But I do agree with your point, Justin, in the sense that, like, I think there are some teams out there, like 110 cap, if it happens, no problem. We'll be there. And there were some other teams that would be nervous about it. Yes, I think you are completely right about that. The thing is, I don't have any problem with it. The two sides have agreed to a CBA, right? And they've had this system. If the revenues say the number should be here, then that's the way it works. And when I shake my hands on a deal, I think it's my duty to live up to the terms of what I agreed to do. So I don't have a big problem with it. And, I will say the one thing, Justin, is that And I think there are sports fans out there who agree with you. It's good to have a villain. It's good to have somebody that you hate on air. Now, usually that person is David Amber. But, like, you know, there can be other people, too. Yes. Yeah, you know, like, it's good for people to hate, someone to have someone to hate. And if the disparity flips a bit, like, there's some teams that aren't going to like it. There's some teams that are going to be nervous about it. But I guarantee there's going to be some fans like you, Justin, who are going to say, I like that. I like it a lot.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman, head of only two games tonight in the NHL, and all four teams kind of got a little bit of steam around them. So Sens and Ducks up next on Sportsnet. Let's start with the Sens and soft tampering. Been a bit of a conversation, of course, over the last couple of days, and it's always Brady Tkachuk. Like, why is it always Brady Tkachuk that we see
because
rumors
people
about?
People want him.
Yeah.
People want him. It's nice to be wanted, Ailish, and people, if he was available, people would want him.
But is he ever going to be available?
You know, not from the Sanders point of view. Like, as far as the Sanders are concerned, like, he's their guy. He's under contract for three more years. They definitely involve him in conversations, and this is what we're thinking, and he's involved, right? And I do know that, two of the reasons that Ann Lauer really got upset about it was, number one, like, you know, you have to go to a guy several times and say there's nothing to this. And he just, him and his wife, Emma, they just had a baby. And, like, I get that. You don't want to constantly be going to a guy and saying stuff isn't true. So that's number one. Number two, and I do think there's something to this. Like Ottawa feels like it kind of gets ignored or disrespected or lost in the Montreal-Toronto corridor. And that's the second time Ann Lauer's really stood up to defend his team. And I think they really love that. I think it's red meat for the Ottawa fan base. Like, my reaction to it is this. Until they start winning a bit more, they're going to have to live with this. I know they don't like it. I know it makes them crazy. But, you know, until they start winning more and getting into the playoffs, you're always going to have to deal with rumors about your players being unhappy. Now, some of it is a little bit of extrapolation. People say, well, Matthew Tkachuk did this, or the Tkachuks are pro-Americans. So, like, I don't know that that's really fair and is a standard that Brady should be held to, but it's there. I think the bottom line is if Ottawa establishes itself as more of a playoff team, at least for the rest of his contract, it goes away. And that's what I really believe in life, especially now in the crazy social media world existence we live in. Like, I'll give you guys an example. Like, all you can do is control you can control. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, but there was that AI thing about me the other day that the Rangers fan put together.
No, what happened?
Oh, you can find it. Like, some Rangers fan did an AI thing of me, and like, the Sportsnet PR staff, they're like, we don't like that. We don't want that. Like, it misrepresents you. And I appreciate them saying that they want to act on my behalf. I personally am like, you can't control this stuff. Like, if someone can't figure out that that's not me and I wouldn't say that stuff, there's not really much I can do about it. And we're all going to have to live with this. It's maybe not right. Maybe we shouldn't have to, but that's where we are in the world now. So you just have to deal with stuff.
Yeah, you just got to submit to it almost, because if you fight back, like, it's probably just going to be worse.
It's right. Like, Justin, like, if someone rips you on social media and you go back at them, they're like, oh, I've got them now. I've got them now. It only spawns up more. So, you know, sometimes you just got to have a thick skin and say, I can't control that. And if anybody thinks that's really me, that's more of a conversation about them than it is about me.
Yeah. The Tkachuk thing is interesting. Like, if it was like tactical offer sheets for the two Oilers that went to St. Louis, this feels like tactical vulturing in a sense, right? Because it's picking up on, your brother did it. And there's been so many issues here in Ottawa, or at least they haven't been able to see the progression that they want. It feels like, it's purposeful in a way, but it's ultimately up to Brady Tkachuk and the Ottawa Senators. So we'll see if we continue to talk about that subject.
You know what it is, Justin? It's a case built on circumstantial evidence.
Yeah.
It's like you've got no smoking gun. You've got no direct proof. But it's like it's this, and this, and they could all be true.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks less. So that's just the way life goes sometimes.
What do you make of the Ducks? We don't talk much about the Ducks, but they're on Wednesday Night Hockey tonight. So
they're great uniforms.
They do have great uniforms. It's definitely an upgrade. But how upgraded is their future potential here? Like looking at the last three first picks for them, Mintikov, Carlson, Senecky. I mean, Senecky scored that brilliant goal the other night. And, you know, you look into their cabinet, like they've got a lot of big names. Zellweger, McTavish, Cutter Gauthier, obviously coming over in the Jamie Drysdale deal. Like, do they have the core nucleus here that's going to turn into something? Looking at their stats, like Mason McTavish stuck on two goals in his parts of four seasons now in the NHL. Are they suffering from, like, accumulating these picks, but some uncertainty in whether or not they're going to become something special?
Well, I think, like, the thing I think about Pat Verbeek is I think he knows players. Like, I look at what he's accumulating there, and I think it looks really good. Now, you know, it's funny. Like some of the conversations I did have at the bog.
Nailed it. Feel good?
It felt great. I thought I really smashed that one into the upper deck. You know, some of the conversations I did have with some of the teams at the bog was that I think rebuilding is starting to really terrify some of these teams. I really do. I think they look like Pittsburgh. They knocked it out of the park. They drafted. They got Crosby first. They got Malkin second. You know, Jordan Staal was a high pick. Fleury was a number one pick. Those four guys were a big part of their first Stanley Cup team. And Fleury, even though he wasn't the starting goalie on the second and third team, he did play a pretty big role, especially in the third one. And so that was a case where going to the lottery all those times really worked. I mean, Chicago, Kane and Taves, they won three cups, and I think you would look at that and then work. But we were talking about Chicago now. Like, they made the decision it was time to start over, and they haven't made the playoffs now, aside from the bubble, in 7 years. Sorry, our Roomba just went off for some strange reason here. they haven't made the playoffs in 7 straight years. You look at all these teams that kind of rebuilt, you know, Buffalo, Detroit, Ottawa, you know, Anaheim. Like, I think it really, I think full rebuilds in this league, like all these teams have great players. Like, you look at their rosters, you say, whoa, that guy's a really good player. That guy could play on my team at any time. Like, especially Ottawa and Buffalo, you really look at them and you say that. But they can't put it together. Like, winning in this league is really hard. Consistent in this league is really hard. And so I look at the Ducks, Justin, and I see a lot of good players. But, even last summer, like, they swung at Marchessault. They swung at Stamkos. They went after a couple of the big studs because they realized you got to go to the next level at some point. And that, to me, is the hardest thing to do. When there's nothing expected of you, and now there's something expected of you, I think we've learned in this league it's not that easy.
Yeah, I think there's a couple teams suffering from that potentially. I think the Montreal Canadiens, you know, maybe a couple steps advanced from the Anaheim Ducks, but still, like, okay, what's going to push it through? What's going to push it over the top? I'm not really sure if they're in that position, and it might take something a little bit more in terms of heavy lifting to get there. I'm not sure if this was a topic of discussion at the Board of Governors. I'm sure it was to a certain extent, but my sort of thinking here as we're, 2 months into the year is that the league's suffering from a lack of elite teams. You look at the Metro, I'm not sure there's an elite team there. Panthers, I think, are the best team in the Atlantic, but they're a diminished version of what they were, at least winning the Stanley Cup last summer, and that could change, I suppose. The Jets have fallen back a little bit. The Wild still continue to dominate, but how good can the Wild be when they're wasting almost $20 million on Zach Parise and Ryan Suter still? And then maybe the Oilers get there, but I'm not sure there's an elite team in the NHL right now. Is that an issue for you? Do you see it the same way?
I'll say this. Like, one thing I did, like, you know, when you're there, like, it's a lot of the business people there, but there are some hockey people. And we were talking about that too, Justin. And, you know, the number one thing that I think a lot of people agree with you. that there are very good teams, but you don't look at anybody and say they're unbeatable. Like I'll say this, there's a lot of respect for Florida, that they could win it again. That they're like, I really got the sense that most people in the league really thought that Florida was still the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. And I would say in the West, but I'll say this too, like I had a couple guys, like there's teams that are up and that are better than you thought. Like people think Minnesota's better than they thought. People think Carolina's better than they thought. I'll tell you this, people think Toronto is better than they thought. Mm-hmm. They thought Toronto was going to take a step back this year. I mean, last night, one guy showed up and they won the game. But, like, they think Toronto's better than they thought. But in the West, like, most people, like, again, I don't think there's truly an elite team there. Like, you're right. But I got the sense if you asked, like, who's the best team in the West, I got a lot of Dallas and a lot of Vegas.
The elite team is Matty Marchese's in-season cup team, who's taken the crown from you. How do you feel about that, Elliot?
You know what? I'm not going on a show until I don't even want to listen to him. I'm not going back on until I'm back in the lead. Now, by the way, I did ask people who said Vegas and Dallas, what about Edmonton? And considering they went to Game 7 of the final last year, and there was a lot of they want to see what they do on defense. Mm. And I think Edmonton is really considering its defensive options. They made a waiver pickup today. But they all think Edmonton's going to do something on their blue line. They want to see what that is.
All right, Elliot, we'll stay tuned. Next 32 Thoughts, and of course, Hockey Night Canada. Appreciate you joining us tonight. It was fun. Get that Roomba picking up all your crumbs as you have your dinner.
Happy recovery from the bug.
Such a slob, yes. yes, thank you very much, Justin. It was, I'll say this, when I woke up and looked out my window on Monday morning and my wife said, you know, it's freezing rain up here, oof, I knew I'd made the right decision in life.
There you go. Thanks, Elliot. We'll chat soon. Appreciate your time.
Take care, guys.
That's Elliot Friedman of 32 Thoughts, of course, and Hockey Night in Canada. So the bog is, I think the bog's catching on. We got a couple texts in about the bog.
Yeah, pro bog.
I'm team bog.
I'd love to hit up a bog.
Like a real one?
Yeah, like Florida. Florida bog. What else would I be talking about?
Because bog is an actual thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Be bogged down by the bog.
Like, it's like a wetland that probably is in Florida. That's probably why it's called the bog.
That's more of a little more literal interpretation than I was going for.
Yeah. Bog talk plus.
All righty.
All right. Okay, so thanks to Elliot for jumping on. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk a little NBA on the other side of the break with James Herbert of CBS. But let's take a little pause and do a little MLB check-in because and we've got our text line open at 590-590. Standard message and data rates do apply. But our question for Jays fans is, you know, yesterday we were on the air live when the Jimenez deal, the trade was solidified. We did our instant reactions, but then we also had a full day of kind of analysis of where the Blue Jays are at. So what's the next move after the Jays did trade for Jimenez? Like, what would you do? What's on your wish list? Justin, what about you?
Well, I will say I feel a little bit more confident about the deal now that we've had some time to digest it. I mean, Spencer Horowitz was a positionally blocked farmhand last year that they turned into a guy who might win gold gloves for you in the middle of the infield. So in that sense, I think it was a pretty smart deal and a pretty good piece of business from the Blue Jays, but it does require something else, and the something else is a little bit more undefined. If I had to dream up the best case move to follow up the Jimenez move, it would be signing Corbin Burns or the next best starter, because I think you have to lean in to who you are. It may be misguided to try and win games with pitching and defense, but this is clearly the path the Blue Jays have taken, and in order to be the best at that path or to get the most out of that route, I think you have to continue to dive into the starting pitching pool and get as good of a starter or the best starter, the person who can knock a couple guys down and make your starting rotation even better than it can be. If they had Burns, Berríos, Gausman, Bassett, and Bowden Francis, if he can do what he did at least at the end of last season, then you got something that could be really special from a starting rotation perspective. Plus, you pair that with the spine of Jimenez and Dalton Varsho in terms of elite defense in the center of the field. I think you could be a really difficult team to play. And if you get into a playoff series, maybe a difficult team to beat when things get a little bit harder from an offensive perspective, although we understand now that home runs tend to rule the day, in the postseason. So for me, it was improve on the rotation. You're probably going to have to make a couple deals to get some bats into the order. But in terms of splashy things, mm-hmm. be better at what you're good at, and that's pitching, at least starting pitching.
Yeah, I think one of the problems here is I feel like there's a bunch of answers, but that's also a good thing because there's a few different solutions in terms of where the Blue Jays can move next. Mine is that power bat. You know, Jimenez is a guy that is very, very, like, applauded for his defensive abilities. This team loves defense, loves defensive runs saved, but somebody needs to hit the ball over the fence. So I would say to sign somebody like Anthony Santander or reunite with Teoscar Hernandez, which I think would be a little harder for this organization to kind of swallow because that'd be showing that they made a mistake. But I did see, well, before we came on the air, that Vladdy posted a photo working out with Teo. Mm. So anyway, let's just start on Santander because obviously I think there's been a lot of rumors about their interest in him. He just had a career year, which you can see that as a really good thing or a thing where there's a bit of pause of like, okay, well, he got 44 home runs, the second most in the AL. Is that who he really is? Is that a blip? Are you going to pay him for the career year and then have something fall short? But I think you're looking at the Blue Jays last year. They scored their lowest output since 1997, only 671 runs. They got to score runs. Like, so I think it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of offensive holes in this lineup. Somebody like Santander can come in, he can mash. 44 home runs, as I mentioned, last year was his career best. So I would do something like that. Or Teo, who's a fan favorite, loves this team, we hope, loves this connection with Vladdy. I could see that as well, but I think it'd be harder to swallow.
If you go Sasaki, Teo, and the addition of Jimenez, like I'm pretty happy with the offseason.
Oh, that would
honestly
be an amazing. Because at where least like you get to see Teo, this?
Like if you get the pitch, I think you need the pitcher just in order to change. Because it's going to be mm-hmm. not only will it not be a strength anymore, it could potentially be a weakness if you don't add to the starting rotation. At least mm-hmm. in my opinion, I mean Gausman, Barrios, Bassett, they all might be on the decline, and they may need someone to step in and be sort of the workhorse at the front of the rotation. So I think they need to add a starter. We talk about a starter the entire offseason. So if you can get that starter, that does have an impact. You get that bat and a fan favorite mm-hmm. at Teo, and you do become or continue to strengthen what is maybe the best defensive team already or could be the best defensive team, at least in the American League. Like, I think you're going to be pretty happy with the offseason. But again, the other shoe has to drop, and no one knows when that's going to happen or if that's going to happen or if it'll satisfy anyone because, yeah, last year it was Justin Turner.
Yes, it was Justin Turner. Okay, we're going to take
an IKF.
IKF. Don't forget, he was underrated, I think, in his.
It was a pretty good Blue Jays header for IKF.
It was actually not bad, okay?
We'll give it to him.
All right, James Herbert after the break. We also have some interesting Bill Belichick news to share and maybe LeBron James maybe LeBron James trade candidacy in a sense. I don't think he wants to be traded.
People are talking.
There's some teams that want to trade for him, and then we'll wrap up with some best bets. We will be right back.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Later on tonight, it'll be Ducks and Sens across the Sportsnet network. At Sportsnet 1, we'll have Houston and Golden State NBA in-season cup. Emirates in-season cup, 9:30 p.m.
No in-season.
Emirates NBA cup, 9:30 p.m., Sportsnet 1. But before we came on, we were digesting some Bill Belichick news. And I think you're kind of disheartened by it.
Yeah, I am a little disheartened by it. And saddening. The news is that he's accepting the head coaching position at UNC. Bill Belichick is going to be running the football program at a basketball school. And to me, that is pretty sad. This guy is so close to being the winningest coach of all. Mm-hmm. He may still be the best coach in the history of NFL, maybe even football. But I feel like this leaves him very vulnerable. It's a whole different ball game in the NCAA. It's different since NIL changed the game. Yeah. Nick Saban not ran away from it, but voluntarily walked away from Alabama because it was becoming different than what it was. I don't know how Bill Belichick, who couldn't be a GM, couldn't hack it as a GM anymore in the NFL. He's a great coach, couldn't do that part of it. Now you're asking him to recruit.
It's a whole other can of worms.
And fight the battle of trying to get prospects, teenagers, to come play for you. Like, I think this is going to eat him up, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really bad. It kind of makes me sad because if someone just decided, hey, we got a great football program here. So we got a great GM. He's going to pick the team. Bill, all we need you to do is coach the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. Then he'd be the winningest coach in NFL history, and he'd have the last chapter of a great career. And now I worry about the last chapter here for Bill Belichick.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty rude awakening, I think. College kids, we got a couple interns ripping around here.
I don't want Bill in charge of them.
I don't want them to have to deal with Bill either.
No.
A lot going on.
That'd be a lot.
Best of luck to Bill and UNC. Okay, so we were tracing the story right before we took a break. The LeBron murmurs a little bit. Windhorse was saying that, you know, it's up to LeBron James. He's got no trade clause, and he's given no indication that he wants to go to that he wants the Lakers to do anything but upgrade the roster. But, you know, Golden State's being named interested in him, interested in Jimmy Butler, and then when we take a break, and Dave McMenamin just tweeted out, ESPN reporter, of course, saying that LeBron James was not with the team Wednesday tonight for personal reasons. He's taking some time, an excused absence. So let's put two and two together and try to get to the bottom of it with James Herbert of CBS Sports joining us. James, we appreciate you jumping on.
Thanks for having me.
What's going on with LeBron James? You think there's some smoke to these rumors or these potential landing spots for him, or is this just LeBron taking some time to figure out his life?
I don't know. LeBron has not told me why he is taking this personal time. He has yet to tell anybody why he is taking this personal time. Look, these stories could be completely sort of separate from each other. The timing is going to make people ask questions, right? Because the Lakers are not playing well. LeBron, frankly, has not been playing that well individually when you compare his production to what he's done in past seasons. He's still, for somebody at this stage of his career, he's playing great. But this year, I mean, his numbers are not quite what they have been. So if you just kind of look at what you would typically expect LeBron James to do in this situation, it might be like him thinking about an exit strategy, just because we have seen that at prior stops. But I will say his attitude with the Lakers has demonstrably been different the last few years. I mean, they did not necessarily have, you know, a championship contending roster last year. He was not threatening to demand a trade or anything like that. He was not asking out. I do think he kind of has really seen his career ending in LA for the last few years. He would obviously prefer to be on a Lakers team that had a chance to compete for a championship, but I don't know that this kind of excused absence has anything to do with him sort of pondering his future.
Is the idea of him potentially going to the Warriors, that being out there, is it something that could flip the dynamic in the Western Conference? If LeBron James shows up on that team with Steph Curry, is there something real there, or is that fantasy land that ultimately would be cool and fun and everyone would want to watch, but it wouldn't amount to much?
It still feels like fantasy land just in terms of like whether or not that could actually happen. Like, I haven't processed this as like a real thing yet, but if I try to do it in real time, like I do think it would be really interesting. LeBron is one of the smartest players to ever play the game. I do think playing the Warrior style would be an adjustment for him, but I mean, he has played for Steve Kerr with Team USA. I think he knows the Warrior system extremely well just from going up against them in like the highest leverage scenarios imaginable. He and Steph would obviously have a ton of fun playing together. We saw their kind of dynamic with Team USA. I think it would be a little bit weird, just to see LeBron wearing that uniform. Like, I don't know that I even like it personally, but, look, until I know what would be going the other way, like what the Warriors would be giving up, it is hard to say how much better it would make them. I do think, you know, there have been other maybe more realistic trade targets with the Warriors that we could talk about. Like, I do think the Jimmy Butler thing, like that one is interesting to me as well. And I do think he would fit. Like, this Warriors team is clearly looking for another star to take some of the pressure off of Steph offensively. I don't think that has to be LeBron James, But I do think like the way they started this season does indicate to me that they're not that far away from competing for a title. I mean, I think they can be an elite defensive team, and at times they've been elite on offense as well. So if you do add another star into that mix, not necessarily LeBron, but just another guy, you know, they were looking last summer at trying to get Paul George and Lauri Markkanen, and now the rumor is Jimmy Butler, and people are maybe fantasizing about LeBron as well. I do think it makes sense that the Warriors are looking to make a move like that to kind of maximize the end of Steph and Draymond's careers.
The Warriors will be in NBA Cup action tonight on Sportsnet 1 against the Houston Rockets with a chance to play the Oklahoma City Thunder in the semifinal. Last night, of course, was the first of, I guess, two of four quarterfinal games in the NBA Cup. And it felt like there was some juice there. And it felt like that was an A performance from the Oklahoma City Thunder, exacting some revenge over the Mavericks in a victory that gets them to Vegas and gets Jalen Williams $100,000 additional in the bank account. Did you learn something about the Thunder last night? Like, yeah, there have been big games over the course of the season up into this point. That was probably the biggest, and they certainly showed out.
Yeah, I don't know if I learned anything. I think it reinforced what I thought about the Thunder, is that this is a legit championship contending team. This is an elite team. Defensively, they've been absolutely incredible all season long, like historically good, honestly, in terms of what they've done on that end. I think offensively, they were near perfect last night. I mean, Shea was just unbelievable. That was a dominant performance. It's not Shea versus Luka. It will be framed that way. It was a team thing. The Thunder defensively did a great job against Luka, and that was primarily Lu Dort, not Shea locking him down. But I mean, obviously Shea vastly outplayed Luka Doncic in that game last night. I thought the Thunder really brought it. I thought it was kind of interesting. Like, I've really loved what Isaiah Hartenstein has brought to that team since he's gotten healthy. But they went on their big run in the game when he wasn't even on the court. They had Kenrich Williams out there playing the five, and he was hitting three-pointers, hustling and getting offensive rebounds. The Thunder were playing the way they did before Hartenstein came back and while Chet Holmgren was still hurt, which is going with that small ball, just really getting out there, contesting every shot, just causing havoc defensively, running, playing fast, making super quick decisions on offense. I mean, they can play so many different ways. And the scary thing about OKC is that we still haven't seen the best version of the team yet. Like, Chet Holmgren is still sitting there on the bench celebrating these big plays, looking nice in his like velour Nike tracksuit. But I want to see him play with Isaiah Hartenstein in not a preseason game. Like, I want to see them develop that chemistry. So we've seen the small ball. We've seen the more traditional look with Hartenstein at the five. I want to see that those big lineups as well. They're going to be able to do like basically any style of basketball kind of on both ends once they have their full team. And I think that's what makes them scary. That's what makes them, I think, a legitimate challenger to the Celtics, who have, you know, they're still the class of the league, but I think OKC is right there.
Yeah, wearing the velour suit was Chet, and tweeting from the velour suit saying that Shea should be the MVP and Lu Dort, another Canadian, should be the DPOY. Another potential DPOY candidate is Jalen Suggs. I want to talk about the Magic for a second, then we're going to get to some Raptors. But this has been a fascinating couple weeks here for the Magic, because Banchero goes down, Franz Wagner steps up and starts playing at an all-star level. Then Franz goes down with the same injury. Jalen Suggs has this unbelievable game last night, almost gets the Magic through the Bucks, but they will fall short in the NBA Cup. I feel like this taking turns approach and falling down the pecking order could be the best thing for them in the future, because Jalen Suggs gets to explore his game the same way Franz Wagner did. And then Banchero comes back and they'll be all, I think, in my theory, a bit better for it. Are you buying stock in the Magic even with those two superstars sidelined?
That's ideally how it will work out. We're going to have to see how the offense kind of operates without Franz for an extended period. I was encouraged by the way they played against Milwaukee, but I mean, this has not been a great offensive team all year long. They've really made their hay on the defensive end. And then I think just what Wagner was able to do, raising his game to an all NBA level without Banchero in the lineup, that was extremely impressive. But when he was off the court, their offense was terrible. Now, I don't expect the numbers without Franz now to be what they were when Franz was available and he was on the bench, because, I mean, their starting lineup is going to look different. Their rotation is going to look different. Jalen Suggs is going to enter these games with a different mindset than he did when he was sharing the floor with Wagner. I do think that there is something to be said for exactly what you're talking about. Jalen Suggs kind of stretching his offensive game, being more of a high-volume playmaker. The same could be said for Anthony Black coming off the bench. The same could even be said with some of their other guys. I mean, Mo Wagner, per minute, is one of the most effective big men in the NBA. They run a lot of their offense through him when he's on the court, just using him as sort of a hub. Maybe you try to get him a few more minutes and try to kind of get like those numbers, see how kind of, you know, sustainable they are when given even more touches over the course of a game. I do think they have other kind of looks. I mean, their offense didn't aesthetically look that bad against Milwaukee. They were running stuff for their shooters. They were running a lot of high post stuff with their bigs. I think they have options. I just do think at a certain point, especially against really good defensive teams, like, you will feel the fact that their two best players are not there. Like, I think when Banchero gets back now, it will be a relief for their offense, just be a guy who can get them a bucket in isolation, a guy that can draw a second defender, because they don't have a lot of guys as like currently constituted that can easily create an advantage and kind of get the chain moving for them.
Perfect way to pivot to the Raptors, who are also missing a lot of their offensive powers. You know, Barnes, Barrett, and IQ haven't played together this season, and it's probably really difficult to evaluate the direction in which the Raptors should go or want to go. And you gave them a B minus on your quarter marks. And I wonder if like their goal should be to get like a D for the rest of the report cards going forward, because without Scottie, who's going to be out for several weeks, and injuries still with IQ, like, maybe they should be leaning into the tank. How do you evaluate where the Raps are going this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Barnes injury makes that a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting team because, like, for me, like, they have been one of the more fun teams to watch in the NBA this year. Almost all their games are really close and competitive. They have lost a ton of clutch games, which, if you are a Raptors fan rooting for them to have great lottery position, then you're happy about those close losses. I think it's a different feeling in the locker room when it comes to losing those games. Like, they're fighting really hard and they've come up short on a bunch of nights. But I mean, I think they have a lot of really positive development stories that they can point to, whether it's Grady Dick, whether it's Osai Agbaji, even like Jakob Poeltl, like a veteran. If you look at how aggressive he's been on offense this year and in comparison to years past, I think you can say he's taken a step forward. And then they have like four rookies who like came in and are contributing immediately. I think there's a lot of stuff to feel good about in Toronto, but I think had Scottie not gone down, you do have this interesting thing. Like, all right, Olynyk's back, Bruce Brown's coming back. Like, is this team just going to be too good to kind of set them up for what everybody thought was coming? And with Barnes out, that's a bummer. That makes them less interesting on a night-to-night basis. It does kind of take the wind out of your sails if you're hoping, all right, they need to get quickly back into the mix. And, like, you want to see that two-man game grow if those are going to be two of your pillars for the future. You want to see how those two along with RJ can kind of work it out, because Barrett, that's another guy who is taking like one of the most improved players in the entire league this year. So you don't get to see quite what you wanted to see, but I think the silver lining is it does give the Raptors a path toward the bottom end of the standings, which is what a lot of people kind of wanted going into this thing in the first place.
Last one for you, James. You did mention, you know, Jimmy Butler potentially being a Warrior by the end of the season. The other team involved in that discussion, apparently, though, is the Houston Rockets. The Warriors and Rockets play together, or play each other, rather, on Sportsnet tonight in the NBA Cup. Knicks and Hawks also going at it, but I think the Warriors and Rockets a little bit more interesting. What's gotten into the Rockets this year? What's working? Fred VanVleet, obviously, is one of the centerpieces there. Alperen Şengün having a great season. Is Butler the type of acquisition that could, like the Warriors, put the Rockets over the top?
In theory, he is, just because he fits with their identity. I mean, they have been a defense-first team this year. Their defense has been, honestly, incredible this year. I think, you know, like, Van Vliet and Brooks, when they got there last year, they set the tone defensively for the Rockets. I think that was obvious. Now you have this year, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, both playing at an all defensive level as well. And you see Alperen Şengün playing the best defense of his entire life. He looks better because of all these really good perimeter defenders that he has next to him. But I think his effort has been there. I think the way that the Rockets have used him in their like pretty aggressive defensive schemes has helped him. Like, they've taken a massive step forward after, I think, establishing their identity last year. And in that respect, you add Jimmy Butler, another playmaker, another guy who can guard basically every position on the court and is a super competitor. That does make sense. I think what doesn't make sense is the timeline. I mean, this is still, with the exception of, you know, Steven Adams and like Brooks and Van Vliet, they're not as old as Adams, but like they are veterans in the league. Like, most of this core is young. And I don't know that Jimmy Butler is the guy to get if it's going to cost you some parts of that core. The Rockets are in a pretty plum position right now in that they are both young and really good, and they have a lot of runway. There are some superstars or just some opportunistic trades that might force the front office to kind of reconsider that path. But I don't, like, I would be pretty surprised if Jimmy Butler ended up being that guy. And part of this is, like, Rafael Stone said publicly, like, he was on NBA radio yesterday and he was talking about the fact he doesn't think they are going to make any moves of consequence during the season. That that could be posturing. There are people around the league who think that the Rockets are still looking to be buyers. But I think if they're buyers, it's much more likely it would be buying something small rather than buying than making a big swing, especially if the player that they're bringing back is not on that timeline.
Well, James, we appreciate your time tonight. Lots to go through. The NBA Cup is picking up steam. We're really fired up about it over the last couple of nights. So appreciate you helping us tee it up tonight and the rest of the season. We'll definitely chat soon.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much. It's James Herbert, CBS Sports and at Outside the NBA on X. All right. So Jimmy Butler, LeBron James, could be some big names traded this.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of under the assumption that it was impossible to make these massive deals now in the new NBA reality. I still think it's probably going to be really, really difficult, but I think the Warriors are the team that could potentially change that because there is the desperation on the Steph timeline, and they did make some financial moves that could potentially set themselves up with, you know, disbanding in a way that got rid of at least one Splash Brother in Klay Thompson. So we shall see. I mean, the LeBron thing is fascinating. In some ways, I think he should, you know, lay in the bed that he made here, recruiting.
Yeah, but it's more,
you know,
fun
getting
when
his
you
son
go
on
put,
the team, and then all of a sudden he's gone. Like, that's
after Juan Soto went to play for the Mets. I want to see crazy chaos in all these leagues. I want to see LeBron James in a Golden State jersey. I want to see Brady Tkachuk in a Leafs jersey.
Wow,
I don't know. I just tried to pick big names, switching to rivals, and that was the first one that came to mind. I also thought of Brady Tkachuk because he's in my best bets. Which we're going to do now. I'm going with Motivation Station again, folks.
It's worked for you in the past.
It has. And I think Brady Tkachuk is going to be very motivated because, they even put Motivation Station there because his name has been floated everywhere. Like, I don't know, but he sees it. Okay. So tonight they're playing the Ducks and it's right up next here on Sportsnet, a 7:30 start. I think he wants to get one in the net. So I've got him as my first Motivation Station goal. And on the other end, the other game tonight, which we do have on Sportsnet Plus, is Rangers and Sabres, which is two teams also in a load of mess right now. So Mika Zibanejad is my next Motivation Station. He is, I think, maybe public enemy number one in terms of what Rangers fans want to see a little bit of improvement from. Plus 300 to get in the score sheet tonight. They're playing a team in the Sabres that are also in a very bad space right now, so not great for New York teams.
Yeah, four teams that are in it a little bit on Sportsnet facing off. Somebody's got to win, so there'll be some better vibes at least for two of the teams. Yesterday in the NBA Cup, had to burn up a couple MVP tickets.
Oh, tell everybody about our MVP tickets.
We picked up on Jalen Suggs. We may have moved a line yesterday on Jalen Suggs.
That was actually the coolest thing I've ever done.
That's a different story. It was pretty cool. Jalen Suggs did not come home despite the fact that he was brilliant in that game. And then we did lose yesterday Luka Doncic, who fell victim to the Thunder. And the Thunder, if they want to win this, I think they're just going to do that. But they might have to go through the Rockets. The Rockets hosting the Golden State Warriors tonight. No MVP bets here, just the Rockets. to win by two or more. Rockets minus two tonight, hosting the Warriors. I think the Rockets are in a good position. I'm a little worried about the fact that the Warriors seem to be taking some money, but I think the Rockets and Thunder are going to meet in Vegas, and for that reason, I will ride with Fred VanVleet and the Houston Rockets.
Would Fred Van, who would you be putting a sprinkle on for an MVP if those are your two teams?
Probably Alper and Şengün.
12-1
in the Rockets. Yeah, it's decent.
Who else?
Well, think about it. 12-1, they got to beat. So it's like a money line parlay potentially in that they got to win tonight against the Warriors, then beat the Thunder, then beat maybe the Knicks. Is that 12-1? Maybe. It'd probably be better to just, you know, bet the Rockets in that sense because Fred could win, I suppose. And there could be someone else that emerges. But, yeah, I think Şengün's the guy for the Rockets. So if you have some investment on the Thunder, maybe that's a decent
Rockets point. 7-1 to win the NBA Cup.
The 12 might be better.
Okay. All right, that was fun. Up next, as we mentioned, we've got Ducks and Sens on Sportsnet across the network. Smith and Jones up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And should I tell everyone my I signed up for a half marathon, so you have to hold me accountable.
I will try to do that.
Thank you.
Was it like 12 months from now?
Yes, it's less than that, but that was the goal of mine, and I'm doing it, but I had to say it out loud. So.
Congratulations.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow.